Hey, it's Tony. On today's show, we will start things off by talking with Taylor Twellman about the World Cup, and then we'll talk to Brian Windhorst about the start of free agency in the NBA and how it affects LeBron, and then we'll go across the pond to talk about Wimbledon with Chris Clary. Big show, but first, commerce.
Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
And one guy says to me, well, what are you doing here? And I go, you know, I'm visiting some friends in Lido. I used to live here.
So he recognized you from Newsday?
Not exactly. No, because he was about 22 years old, and Newsday was way further back in the rear view. And he said, what are you doing? And I told him that. And he goes, no, what I mean is, why are you playing this place? I said, what do you want me to do? You want me to play Shinnecock? I'm here. This is what I want to play. I'm not that good.
This is General George Washington, and you're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
On that very theme, we got a very nice note from Steve Bianco in Long Beach. Said, I'm a longtime fan of PTI and the podcast and Long Beach resident. Thank you for years of enjoyment. As we were of similar age, I, unlike the short-time third in your group, I remember your great work at both Newsday and The Times. Glad you got to revisit the area. Yes, as much as we have grown, certain great places like Marvel, Gino's Pizza, best pizza in the world, and the Laurel Diner have stood the test of time. Glad you got to play Lido again, just sorry you had to experience it under the current conditions. The town of Hempstead has really let it deteriorate over the last few years. They claim they're going to make improvements, but as this is an election year, we remain skeptical. Such a shame, as it is such a beautiful place. Just love the signature 16th hole. Par 5, hit over water twice. I parred that hole.
Yes,
I parred
you did.
That hole. Thanks again for the years of great fun. And tell Lil Moline to eat it. Okay, Steve Bianco in Long Beach.
What was the pizza order? Just pizza regular? Or?
Just regular pizza from Gino's, the best pizza in the world. Not New York-style pizza. Well,
by definition.
No, it's Gino's. Just stop. Okay, so we are about to, in the Washington, D.C. area, enter a long heat wave, last 4 to 5 days, bright sun, literal temperatures over 100. Literal temperatures, not heat index, not
no
feels
relief
like.
Overnight.
Hmm?
No relief overnight.
No, be in the 80s in the morning.
Get that heat.
Be in the
dome.
80s. I worry about my dog. I worry about Chessie, a long-haired dog. I worry about her in this. I worry about her walking on the pavement. I want to make sure that she's walked as much on the grass as possible, which will not be as harmful to her.
Yeah, reminder, different surfaces maintain heat in different ways. So if you walk in some of those paving stones, they're going to be a lot hotter.
Yes, you don't want to do that. You want to get in grass if you can. And I'm worried about me. I intend to go out and play golf tomorrow morning if I can. I intend to go play golf on Saturday on July 4th. I'm old, and this heat is sapping, and so I've said to Michael, just try to make sure I don't die. Well, get me off the course.
Yeah, pay attention to your body. Notice if your heart rate starts to change.
I don't know. I mean,
lots of water.
Yeah, but I mean, then you drink too much water, and you get bloated, and you get sick. I don't want to drink too much water. You know, but I also don't want to stand there and say I'm a tough guy, because I'm not a tough guy. And it's going to be over 100 degrees. I know Wilbon says that's nothing, because it's dry heat in North Scottsdale. Where I guess if you put a chicken on the driveway, it wouldn't cook in 2 hours.
Have you ever tried any of those the UV umbrellas that like will cool down the immediate area where you are in the golf course?
No,
by
I've
like
never
15
seen.
To 20
I've,
degrees?
I've never had held one in my hand.
Yeah.
So maybe we'll get one of those. I don't know. Oh, I'm going to try tomorrow and see what happens. If it's really bad.
Well, you get a cart.
You know, yes. Well, yes, you got to have a cart.
Get a little airflow.
Drive around a little bit.
Kick the front leg out.
Let me get to the Nats. Because two things happened to me yesterday that happen all the time. I got no mail from Michael yesterday. I got a little bit of mail from Chris. I got more from Chuck.
These are texts.
I know, yeah. I know that Chuck was watching and I was watching. I went out to walk the dog. I came back. There'd been a fight. Cade Cavalli and Wilson Contreras. And I didn't.
Second game in a row.
I didn't know anything about it. I didn't know anything about it. And
same umpire.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, is that right?
Mm-hmm. They were barking at each other after he struck him out.
Well, if I understand this correctly, Wilson Contreras came back through the mound at one point.
At the end of the first.
And bumped Cade Cavalli.
Oh, well, you can't do
and
that.
And bumped him. So when Cade Cavalli struck him out, Cade Cavalli barked at him, sit down. You know, and then there's a huge fight. Wilson Contreras gets thrown out all the time.
So this is going back games before this. This is after earthquakes in Venezuela. I think it's back to the Yankees game where there's a benches clearing brawl as well. But in the game before this, game one of the Nat series, Contreras is going back to the dugout after being called out on a check swing, and he sarcastically goes to his helmet.
Yeah, taps his helmet off, and the umpire says, "That's it, you're gone."
Oh, yeah. So
felt like a quick trigger on that.
So I missed all of that, and Chuck says,
"Did you see what's got tossed on your side? Meatball."
Yeah, Meatball got tossed.
Yeah.
I saw it all today.
He doesn't have a, throw and miss stuff, so he had to take out the wrestling moves.
But Chuck Todd writes me, says, "Just rewind it. You're going to want to see it." And I said, "Just rewind it? Who do you think I am? I don't know how to rewind it. I'll get Michael to do it in the morning." But I actually saw all of it. Then, now, the Red Sox have scored on an unearned run. Meade made an error in the first inning and let a run get in. Cavalli's looked great. I mean, he's striking everybody out. He looks
13
great.
13 Ks.
But after six, it's 1-1, and I know they're going to lose, and so I stop. I leave.
And
I find out that they then score seven runs
Luis
in the
Garcia
next two
Jr.
innings.
Again. Seventh inning. Yeah.
Seven runs in the
and
next
CJ
two innings.
Home run.
The Nats roll. I had absolutely no idea. So I woke up this morning. I didn't know, hadn't seen the
How
fight.
How about this? Cavalli's the first Nats pitcher to throw seven or more innings with 10 or more strikeouts and one hit or fewer.
Since Strasburg?
Scherzer. On my birthday
in
2018.
Okay. So it's 8 years. Yeah. It had to be Scherzer or Strasburg. The answer to that question had to be that.
Not Gio.
And so this is why your manager took some issue when the pitcher was not also tossed for his role.
Which, by the way,
you could make a case for that.
I think you can make a case for that.
I mean, if we're going to choose, we'd rather have Meatball stay in the game because he's not playing and have the guy that's striking every single guy out get him out of there.
I mean, if you... There's a hair trigger on Contreras because he gets thrown out a lot and he's obviously annoying. But it seems to me that Cavalli was 50% of this. And that you
I put it at 30 to 35.
But you could have thrown him out.
Yes, I think you have to go back to the bump in the first inning.
Yeah, that's definitely the origin of
the larger the larger question there is the use of the word boy and if there's any
That's right. Unless he says that to everybody.
Yeah.
You know, unless that's
an emotional game.
Yeah. So
the rubber match is today, right?
Is it today or tonight? Is it a day game?
I don't know if it's today.
Yeah, I think it's a day game.
Well, I'm going to miss it. I got
to
do it.
Very cool to see the monster, though, in play.
Yeah.
Yes.
No, it's. Look, I know I'm biased, but it's always lovely to see Fenway. It's just,
just great. It's just great. Okay, so what we're going to do now is, with full disclosure, we taped this last night with Taylor Twellman in advance of tonight's knockout round of 32, the United States against Bosnia-Herzegovina. So we taped this yesterday, so we'll go to it now. We've got Taylor Twellman with us, which means it's a soccer conversation. Although we could talk about golf and we could talk about baseball, but we're going to talk about soccer. The United States is into the knockout round. They play Bosnia-Herzegovina. I hope I pronounced that correctly. How good is that squad?
Well, they're so good, they got two countries, Tony. In all seriousness, though, this is a team, and I think your listeners will appreciate this because they've watched the previous three games. They will be better tactically than Paraguay, and technically they'll be better than Australia, but it will be the same kind of opponent. Defend first, numbers behind the ball, and then they're going to have to come up with some kind of plan of dealing with the United States press. They knocked Italy out of the third straight World Cup in the World Cup playoff. So this is a good team, a solid team. Now, I'm not going to sit here and tell your listeners and you that the United States is not favored. They absolutely are. But it's a different kind of opponent. And look at what Paraguay just did to Germany. So actually, the surprise of Paraguay beating Germany is a good warning sign for the United States that they need to take care of business and they've got to be aggressive from the opening whistle.
You are reading my mind. Paraguay knocked out Germany on penalty kicks, but they were tied for the entire game. We beat Paraguay 4-1. 4-1. Yeah. What does that tell you about us playing, Bosnia-Herzegovina? Doesn't it make us look better for what Paraguay just did?
Yes, a little bit it does. Now, everyone mischaracterized Paraguay, right? So Paraguay only gave up six goals in World Cup qualifying, and that includes games against Colombia, Argentina, Brazil. So they were a good defensive team. That's the team we saw against Germany. The United States made them uncomfortable. They outplayed them, but they played the game at a high pace that made Paraguay uncomfortable. They're going to have to do the same with Bosnia. Now, Bosnia is not going to be as athletic as, say, Paraguay, but they're going to be smarter. They're going to be more in tune. They're not going to be all up in the baby games, as I like to say, with the flopping and diving the way we saw all of the Paraguayan players against Germany.
Yes.
So that's where this game becomes interesting, in my opinion. But there's a caveat to this. Bosnia has never played in a World Cup knockout stage game. This is their first one in the history of their country. Their red, white, and blue are the same colors. And yet there's going to be 70,000 fans in Northern California that are all wearing red, white, and blue that are not rooting for them. That will be an emotional test for them. And that's why I say the first 45 minutes is the most important part of the game.
So if I understand this correctly, and God knows I don't know soccer, but you're saying this is another defensive first team. And if that's the case, we should press on offense, right? We should try and create a tempo that is to our advantage, yes?
Yes. Don't wait for the game to come to you. You take the game to them. Don't do what Germany did against Paraguay. Germany was arrogant. They were slow. They were reactive, not proactive. You've got to be proactive. When you know you're going up against the team, you'll have respect for them because they can score goals. Bosnia score goals. But the U.S. knows Canada really well. So Bosnia played Canada. The United States is going to have watched that game three or four times.
Right.
That score was 1-1. Now, Canada should have scored four or five goals, but Canada wasn't as clean as the United States can be going forward. That's the difference. But I agree with you. Set the tempo. Be aggressive. Don't wait for the game to come to you.
By the way, on another subject, watching the game last night, watching the Germany-Paraguay game, the last 10, 12 minutes of it, the Paraguayan goalie appeared to be 8 feet tall. He was so much taller. It turns out he's actually 6'6". That's like, is that huge in soccer, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, if you throw his cleats on, right, Tony, you can probably say he's 6'9", right?
Yeah, yes.
And then you throw, and then you watch the penalties. That's imposing. And listen, we've seen now two penalty kick shootouts, Morocco-Netherlands, and we've seen Germany-Paraguay. You're seeing world-class athletes, world-class soccer players miss the goal. Now, some of that for your listeners is when you, out of the corner of your eye, see a 6'6 goalkeeper with a wingspan that covers the goal, you're trying to be
extra precise
and you end up missing the goal. Exactly.
He's a condor, that guy. I was stunned by that. Can I ask you this? Penalty kicks, in your mind, is that a satisfying ending to you?
It is after 30 minutes of extra time. You've got 120 minutes. I will argue with anyone. If you can't score a goal and win a game in that period, then let's move on and get an ending to this.
Okay.
And I will say this. This is part of the American public, general public, that's still trying to figure out, well, why end a game in ties? My rebuttal to that is you've got 90 minutes. Do something. Don't waste fans' time. Don't waste the broadcaster's time.
Right.
Do something or move on. And that's why there needs to be a finite ending, because I'll tell you right now, Paraguay would have been 11 players diving and flopping, and that game would have lasted till Friday morning.
Yes. Just to reiterate, because I know you got things to do, you believe that we should win this game, right? We should win today's game.
Yes. If Bosnia wins the game, it's an upset.
Now,
it won't be a upset the way Paraguay beat Germany.
Right.
And if it goes to penalties, well, that's a crapshoot.
Yes.
I think the United States should win the game. And I think then the next game, whether it's Belgium or Senegal, in Seattle with that environment, I think they should win that game too.
When they were in the Dutch game, there were four penalty kicks that missed everything. You can put a boat in that goal. How can you miss the goal?
I know. You want to hear something crazy? Tony, Patrick Kluivert in 2000 hit the left post. In 2026, Justin Kluivert, his son, hit the same post.
Oh.
Netherlands lose both shootouts.
Oh, wow.
26 years later.
They asked, when the Dutch coach came off the field, they said, have you already resigned? That's a tough crowd, right?
It is a tough crowd, but it's no different than Bo Schembechler at Michigan, right? You know when the Michigan coaches or Michigan fans say he's a Michigan man. You follow where I'm going with this?
Yes, yes, yes.
Ronald Koeman is 100% Dutch, and he managed that game as if he hated the Dutch. I've never seen a Dutch manager manage a game with no identity, with a defensive first mentality. The Dutch would rather lose the game 5-3 than play any different way than they know how. And he single-handedly managed to manage that game. He absolutely, in my opinion, should have been asked that question. And quite frankly, he stepped down today. Yeah. He should have.
There you go.
That was a disgrace.
There you go. All right, we will see you on PTI tomorrow. Thanks for helping us.
Yeah, buddy. See you, dude.
Taylor Twellman, boys and girls. And now we will get back to the show that we're trying to do because we stuck Taylor in the middle like this and carved out 7 or 8 minutes in the middle. So that was Taylor Twellman. We're guest loaded today. We have Taylor Twellman. We have Brian Windhorst, who's very – basketball is very much in the news. We had to remake the PTI show yesterday when the LeBron James news came out. Not only that, then Kawhi Leonard was going to be traded to Toronto, and Kelleher said, would you put that above LeBron James? And I said, oh, no. Oh, I wouldn't put anything above LeBron James. Yeah. I wouldn't put Serena Williams above LeBron James. I wouldn't do that. So we had to reimagine the entire show, and I was afraid, by the way, I was afraid that we were going to have to go live because I thought the Serena match was going to take forever and ever. But we will get you to the next segment. I just wanted to say this one thing that I have talked to Michael and Nigel about this. I don't know why this happened, but earlier this morning I was walking Chessie when it occurred to me that the two greatest, most brilliant movies ever made, comedy movies of all time, were Animal House and The Hangover. And I just fixated on that. And mostly because of Shamalama Ding Dong.
So hit it.
Which is the most brilliant parody song of all time.
It's just...
Of all time. Yeah. And now it's probably time and place and age that puts me in that situation. And I think of these movies that way. Although certainly The Hangover is a very recent movie relative to Animal House.
Sure.
Yeah. Animal House is 40 years old. It's got to be 40 years old, right?
Yeah, 1979, I think.
Whatever it was. I mean, and I'd like to find out. I'm sure I could look this up. But the people who wrote Animal House, I just assume they're Harvard Crimson guys.
Yeah, it got to be the Lampoon guys from there, right?
Yeah, well, Lampoon guys, not Crimson guys. Crimson is the newspaper, the daily newspaper. Anyway, so we will come back. Are we coming back with Christopher Clary or are we coming back with Brian Windhorst?
We're coming back with Brian next.
Brian Windhorst, when we return, I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is Andrew Bell. I'm not sure that we have played Andrew Bell before.
I don't believe we have, no.
No. So we're going to play Andrew Bell twice today. This first song is called 22. We don't know much about Andrew Bell.
Well, do we want to tell the people why?
Because you forgot to give me the sheet.
Yes, I did.
Which identifies Andrew Bell and biographies, if there is such a thing, Andrew Bell.
Sorry about that, Andrew.
It's okay. Anyway, this is called 22. It plays in the most sought-after person on ESPN. Today and tomorrow and yesterday, Brian Windhorst. The biggest story, we changed the entire PTI show, and justifiably, because LeBron James has told the Los Angeles Lakers he's going to be back. He ain't going to be back with them. Jeannie Buss wrote a beautiful note about it. I mean, it all seems to be very, very amicable, and that's fine. You've known LeBron James for over 20 years. What do you think he wants, and where do you think he's deciding among?
I'm not sure. First off, good morning, Tony.
Good morning.
I'm not sure he knows.
Yeah.
You know, in the last free agency, and these are, you know, you have to sort of delineate because we've now had many.
Mm-hmm.
The last free agency, he knew for months he wanted to be a Laker, and on the first day, he announced in the afternoon, sort of get it out of the way for everybody. They had a nice, clean press release, and everybody in Cleveland kind of knew it was coming, and there was no drama. He had decided long in advance. I'm not sure he made up his mind that he was even going to play next year until, you know, recently. He didn't decide yesterday, but it was recently that he decided he was going to play. And I don't think he knows where the best situation is going to be. I'm sure he has an idea, but this is not, I don't think this is fully formed and fully planned out. And that's why I think this is going to be a fascinating one for two reasons. One, because he's not, the message is he's not seeking max money.
Yeah.
So teams don't have to rip their team to shreds. They don't have to have had been planning for years. They can just add him. And that means that where he goes could have a huge effect on the balance of power. And the second thing is we now have the opportunity for teams to compete for him. And, you know, they're not going to be able to compete with money because it's not going to be about the salary. So these are all factors that make this a little bit unpredictable.
Are you surprised that he is going to leave the Lakers?
No.
Okay.
I think last summer they extended Luka Doncic and very clearly made the future about him. And it was extension time for LeBron. You have 1 year left on your contract, and he's always been extended. In fact, teams fall all over themselves to extend him. Never in his career has he ever had a situation. Even the years when he, all those years he left as a free agent, that was when he opted out of his contract. A contract of his has never come to an end since 2003, when he signed his first contract. He's never been at the end of his contract. And the Lakers had next to no interest in extending his contract. Mm-hmm. Nobody ever. That never happens. So as soon as that happened, the ground was set up for this.
Okay.
And this season, he had a very good year.
Yeah.
But you didn't see during the year the Lakers falling all over themselves worried that he might leave. And so while I couldn't have said for sure, there were signs along the way.
Wilbon is, of course, as anybody knows who's heard him or watched him, pushing for the Warriors. Wilbon is pushing for this, you know, old age tour with the Warriors, where he's convinced, he rattles off nine guys on the Warriors and is convinced that if they, you know, if they don't fall apart physically, that they, that that's the right place for LeBron. What are your thoughts on the Warriors? Because
yeah,
I have a different spot. Yeah,
it's a compelling case. You know, the idea of playing with Steph Curry is pretty fascinating. I have no idea what Jimmy Butler is going to be. I know people say they're ahead of schedule coming back from ACL rehab, but, you know, I've never torn my ACL, thank goodness, but
yeah,
there's no such thing as being ahead of schedule in ACL rehab. I'm sorry, there's just not. So with all due respect to Jimmy Butler, I have no idea what he's going to be. So people are going to say, well, what about this with the Warriors and what about that? And I'm not going to be able to give an answer. And if anybody wants to make a prediction, I'll congratulate them. But obviously the idea of him playing with Steph Curry is just fascinating. And as somebody who was with the Team USA in 2024 all along the way, I mean, that was one of the great experiences of my career. It was like going around with the Rolling Stones for, you know, 6 weeks across the globe with them. And so I love that concept. But,
right,
you know, there could be some other teams. I think that the Cleveland Cavaliers have a window here. The Cavs have the ability, if they want, and they may not want, but they have the ability to improve their roster and then try to add LeBron. Like, if LeBron is sitting on the fence looking at Cleveland and looking at Golden State, the Cavs have a much bigger window to improve their team than the Warriors do. The Warriors have limited levers they can pull. The Cavs do not. The Cavs could be aggressive in trade and say, LeBron, look what we've done to our team. Come play for us. And that is going to be, I'm sure, a discussion that everybody's going to have in the coming days.
Would you think he might consider among the Knicks, the Thunder, or the Spurs?
If I were them, I would have an internal discussion about it and think about it. I don't think he will do that because that's a naked ring chase.
Yes. Yes.
And I don't think he needs to do a naked ring chase. You know, he's not, and I say this with full respect, he's not Charles Barkley. He doesn't need anything to have his career. So when I spoke to LeBron's representatives yesterday, they said two things. One, he wants to play competitive basketball. He wants to have his juices flowing. He wants to gear up for a season. He's playing for something. They didn't say he had to win a championship. just had to be competitive basketball, okay? And the second thing is basketball happiness. He wants to be, you know, he wants to be happy with his life. And, you know, I'm from Cleveland. I'm not, you know, I'm not from Paris. I just think that going and moving to San Antonio at age 42, I don't see that as something that he is going to be. I mean, he can play golf year round. I guess that's I guess part of happiness. But I don't see that in the cards. Even though, of course, that would be his best chance maybe to win a title. I just don't see that as a priority.
Okay, let me move off this a little bit. Giannis went to Miami. It seems like years ago, and it's only about a week and a half. Ja Morant was exiled to Portland. They hired a coach for 1 year, which is a terrible position to be in, and now they stick him with Ja Morant. And I'm not going to suggest that Ja Morant doesn't have the ability to be a great player, but what we have seen so far is that he does not really help a team. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, so here's the thing. Let's ignore, and I mean, this is a big ask, but I'm going to ask you to ignore the suspensions.
Woo.
Woo. So, yeah. So let's, okay. Now let's just look at the player. His scoring average has dropped four consecutive seasons. In those 4 years, as he's dealt with injuries, you know, he's just, you know, the way he plays is mesmerizing, but it leads to injuries, and his athleticism has waned a little bit. I mean, he's still, I'm not saying the man can't dunk, but he's not throwing people through the rim like he did when he came into the league. And so you need your game to develop. And over those 4 years, he shot under 30% from three, not under 40, under 30.
That stinks.
We don't guard you. That's yeah. Like, go ahead and shoot range. His health, again, not the suspensions, but he's played 70 something games the last 3 years combined. I agree. Large part of that is suspension, but also he's been injured. And so he also is owed $87 million over the next 2 years. That is a package that most people are going to hit reject on before you get to the off-court stuff. You know, and that's the thing. The player that they traded for him, Jeremy Grant, I mean, no offense to Jeremy Grant. He's a fine person and a decent player. He has one of the most undesirable contracts in the league. He has 2 years and $70 million. The Blazers have been trying to trade him for a year and have gotten nowhere. And so basically these teams traded two guys that were untradeable for each other. And, you know, buying low on Ja Morant, it's a reasonable gamble because he is highly incentivized to have a big year. But I don't think it's like a league altering transaction. But you know, I could be wrong.
Kawhi Leonard went back to Toronto. I mean, I'm sure there's a good reason for this. I don't know the good reason for this. I'm curious what you think of that, and I'm curious whether you think that that in any way affects his suspension or non-suspension for that no-show job.
Well, I'll give you a very basic reason that people do things in the world, Tony. It's very simple. It's called money.
Mm-hmm.
The Clippers did not want to give him a contract extension, despite him having an all-NBA season last year.
Yeah. Played 65 games. He doesn't usually play anywhere near that. Yeah.
Right, and he is 35 years old. And he has this long history of injury, and the Clippers' plans with him for the last 7 years have gone sideways consistently, and so they didn't want to give him an extension. And, you know, if you're him, you're worried about injuries. This is your last chance for a big payday, and the Toronto Raptors were like, yeah, we'll give you an extension. As soon as he found – he didn't want to leave. As soon as he found out the Clippers were not going to extend him, his agents looked around, and Toronto said, we'll take you back. And the reason Toronto wanted to do that is because while Toronto has an interesting team, I don't know how much higher their ceiling would be. All of their players that they have are they're all signed to big contracts, and you know they're not going to get high draft picks. They're just sort of faced with being in the middle, and they saw this as a pathway to leap to the top. And I think they could be right if he stays healthy. I think Toronto can be a top three team in the East. You know, Scotty Barnes
really?
Is. Oh yes. I mean, well, the East isn't. I mean, we're on July 1st, Tony. The teams haven't made their move yet. I don't know where Jaylen Brown's going to be. I don't know where LeBron James is going to be. So I can't. That's what one of the things people are saying. You know, when you see these moves, you get these questions like, where do they stack up in the East? I'm like, I don't know, man. We're 10 minutes into the new season. People haven't made their moves yet, but I think Toronto has a real shot to be up there. And, you know, the Giannis move was fascinating and has potential, but the New York Knicks did not roll over in bed when that happened.
Right.
They're not looking at the Heat as a team that, you know, but this move will get the Knicks' attention. I'm not saying they're getting up and running to the gym, but this will get their attention.
This is wonderful. I know that 87 people want you to go on TV, so we're going to let you go. But thank you.
Tony,
thank you for being
right
on.
Now, literally at this second, yes. As I'm talking to you, I'm getting makeup.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. There you go.
Yeah.
All right. I'll talk to you soon. Thank you, Brian.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Brian Windhorst, boys and girls. Love Brian Windhorst. We will take a break. We will come back with Christopher Clary, who is in Wimbledon and can tell us all about Serena yesterday and the fact that she lost. I don't really think anybody thought she was going to lose the first one, but we'll ask Chris. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Once again, this is Andrew Bell. We have no information on Andrew Bell.
Nothing.
We'll have it later in the week or next week or whenever. Or Andrew Bell can call us. We don't know. This is called Amour, which means love in one of those foreign languages. One of them. Michael, if people, independent artists like Andrew Bell, want to send us their original music to have it played on podcast, how do they do it?
Send us your music by emailing it to jingles@tonykornheisershow.com, and I'm staring at our printer.
Oh, is it activated?
Yes. I could print this for you.
Print what?
The email.
Oh. I thought the printer here didn't work and hasn't worked for years. Okay, anyway, this plays in Chris Clary, and this segment with Chris Clary is brought to you by FanDuel. Play your game. Chris is in Wimbledon. The Serena Williams thing was a real big deal yesterday. A real big deal in tennis, a real big deal among viewers, a real big deal in sports. What were your thoughts about it going in, and what did the brevity of it and the way it was played, did it sway you going out?
Well, you know, I covered Serena in my time at the New York Times pretty much all the way through. So yeah. I saw, you know, hundreds of matches with Serena. I watched her go through all these ups and downs through her career. And, you know, can be unpredictable. So I suppose it was appropriate when she never used the R word when she left in 22, that there would be, the door would be ajar. But I was still very surprised that she decided to come back, especially in singles, without having played any matches in singles for almost 4 years. And she wasn't exactly thriving in singles before she left. So I thought it was risky in a lot of regards. And I frankly was a bit mystified by the motivation for it. She talked a lot about, not a lot, but talked about, you know, wanting to play in front of her kids, you know, wanting to go out there with a different attitude and wanting to enjoy the moment more, maybe, you know, maybe more than she had in the past. Those just didn't seem compelling to me as reasons. But, you know, Serena has always marched to her own drummer like her sister has. And so she went through with it. And honestly, Tony, you know, she didn't embarrass herself. This was not a Bjorn Borg with the wooden racket, you know, fighting against the windmills of 1991. This was, you know, some pretty big hitting, some great serves on occasion. It was just really understandably inconsistent. The crowd was way into it, and it kind of built something potentially pretty special there in the third set with, you know, getting the tiebreaker and getting up a break in the third, and then really the air went out of the balloon really quickly. There have been reports today, you know, her agent Jill Smoller said she hurt her knee at the end of the first set, which is, you know, perhaps part of the reason why she kind of fell off a cliff there in the quality of play at the end of the match. And also, that's the reason why supposedly she didn't come to press and give a press conference afterward, because she was excused because of the knee problem. She's had those knee issues before. You haven't played singles in 4 years. You go out on that slippery grass, you know, bad things can happen. But, you know, all in all, it wasn't as bad as I expected. And I think her opponent, who was, you know, ranked in the 80s and hadn't really won a match all year, was surprisingly good. But then Serena also made her look good by not being able to move and track down some of the shots that the players would have tracked down.
Yeah, let's go over this, because in the first set early on, and probably to me this was nerves, but she looked gassed in the first set. She couldn't cover the whole court. She could cover half the court. and she's in there with a pigeon. You know, Maya Joint has lost 15 of 18 matches this year. She's 19 years old. She idolizes Serena. She was set up to fail. She was definitely, she got the greatest nickname in the world, the Ginger Ninja. I love that. But she was set up to fail. And I think everybody, I mean, I'll speak for myself. I thought Serena would win. I thought she'd lose the second match, but I thought she would win. And I certainly thought that when she won the second set. But she didn't ever look as powerful as she could have been during a lot of the points on that set. She didn't ever look like somebody who would be a threat to win a tournament, right?
I agree with that. No, I honestly, it's the longest of long shots. I guess just based on Serena's improbable ability to rise to occasions throughout her career, you can't completely rule it out, but right. I think you can come pretty close. And, you know, exactly, without that option of winning another major, which is what she was chasing before, you know, really, what's the BBD? I can understand coming back and playing doubles with Venus. That makes some sense.
Sure.
You know, kind of a symbolic thing to go out. The sisters came in together. Eventually, they're going to go out together. And there's beauty in that. But to come out and play singles when you know you really have no chance to prevail and get deep in a tournament seems kind of a fruitless exercise. And I honestly, it's only she can answer the question, though, Tony, whether it was worth it and whether she enjoyed it and whether it was a sense of accomplishment in that. But compared to her heyday, there were moments. I mean, she was miles from the balls a lot of times. And yeah. Maya Joint's winner count was huge because, you know, Serena couldn't play defense off certain balls. But again, I can't say she embarrassed herself because she really didn't. I mean, when I was on court, I was a few rows back, watched the whole thing, and I think the crowd took pleasure in her high points.
Yes.
But they were awfully just kind of really, really inconsistent and limited mobility. And that was the same problem she had back in 2022 as her career kind of wound down the first time.
Here's what I would say, and I said it yesterday on the PTI show. You want to play? God bless. You've earned this. You're one of the greatest five tennis players, or female tennis players of all time. You do whatever you want. If it makes you happy, fine. But, you know, we can't go with the illusion that you're actually going to win something. But I was surprised she lost. I thought it was set up for her to win convincingly. Did you not?
Yeah, I mean, Maya Joint, you said she's won three matches coming in, but those were at the 125 level, which is not officially the tour.
Oh,
so
okay.
she hadn't won a tour match since January. She's had some back problems, to be fair. She had a good season last year, and she won a grass court tournament, so she's can be handy on the grass. But honestly, to me, almost a bigger surprise was the way Maya Joint hit the ball.
She hit it good.
At times under pressure, she played pretty well. You know,
yeah.
She really did. So I wasn't expecting that. I thought she would sort of, you know, curl up into a ball under the occasion, and she did not do that. And Serena also missed the opportunities to kind of slam the door on her. But I agree. I saw Serena as a favorite going into the match, even though the odds makers did not. But just so much uncertainty. I mean, it's just so hard not to play singles in a tournament, you know, for almost 4 years and come out there and perform. So
it's
frankly,
different
that,
than practice.
Yeah, it wasn't all bad. It wasn't,
you know,
all bad.
It's different than practice. It's different. The adrenaline is different. All these things are different. And I think you could see that in her. She hit some great shots. She hit some very powerful shots. She, you know, she just couldn't cover the whole court. What I wondered about, and I don't know, I don't think it was an accident that the commercials during the match, one or two of them were for that weight loss drug that Serena Williams is involved in. I just sort of wondered if you felt there was any component here, I'm going to go out and play again, and I'm going to sell this drug, and we're all going to be happy and rich.
God, she's made so much money. You hope it's not that. I mean, it's a jarring thing, isn't it? And, you know, definitely. And I've had many of my readers make that point and say, you know,
right.
You know what's in it for the family? Her husband is an early investor in the company that she's promoting. And, you know, one of the reasons she, you know, came back, I think, is because she felt just physically better than she did before and has lost the weight. And it was holding her back in movement before. But you're not going to turn into Usain Bolt at 44.
No, you're 44. It's like you're 44.
You're just not.
Yeah, go to history. Martina came back and won one match, got blowed out on the next one, like 1-0, and said, okay, you know. I mean, it's an itch that people want to scratch, but not everybody is Tom Brady. Like, not actually anybody is Tom Brady, you know, except Tom Brady.
But I think Serena, if she was, you know, willing to do this, could be a Martina, because Martina, when she came back, like you said, in her 40s, you know, she played one singles match at Wimbledon, two at Wimbledon, and won one of them, and that's impressive at 47.
Yes.
But she had a good success in doubles, and very representative.
Doubles is great.
If Serena wanted to do that, Serena could do that. Whether Serena's going to be happy doing that, I have my serious doubts about that. But she could. That's something that's possible as a second act. But,
all right.
You know,
let me broaden.
Just that wild card and played singles showed that there's other things in play, other things, other desires, and other unscratched itches. But I think that itch is going to stay unscratched, Tony.
Well, I mean, I hope she does play doubles. I mean, because you can have a very satisfying next career doing that for your children. I mean, it'd be great fun. By the way, if I recall correctly, everybody in the French Open was out by now. Everybody was out by the second round. Do you have any sense of that at Wimbledon, or is Wimbledon, do you think, going to go truer to form?
You know, there's been a couple small upsets. Ben Shelton losing, Melina Svitolina losing. But I think some of the pixie dust seems to have evaporated here at Wimbledon. And Maya Felinska, that crazy story at the French Open, the Polish qualifier who got to the final.
She went out
in the first round. It was up a 5-2 in the second set. One match point, and ended up getting hurt and slipping on the grass. You know, pretty symbolic. And some of the players that broke through there, I've already been bounced out. But I got a feeling many surprises await us here, and it depends what happens. Yannick Sinner did not look great in his first match.
No, and was bleeding.
Ended up having to really struggle to get through that. Got a bunch of guys that are vulnerable on the grass. Women's tournament, Sabalenka, who's number one seed, has never won Wimbledon and has looked really, you know, emotionally combustible in recent months. So we'll see. I mean, I think there's many surprises ahead, but there are a few of the French Open escape artists still around, so we'll see how it goes.
So yesterday, you know, in the United States, of course, they tell you that the match with Serena is going to start at 12 noon. So, you know, I'm geeked up. I want to see it. We're going to talk about it on TV later, and I get ready at 12 noon, and Zverev is there for the next 4 hours, and I just thought, come on now. I didn't sign on to watch this guy. I don't care about him. And then they cut to Ben Shelton, and, you know, as in the great tradition of Americans being dogs early in this tournament, Ben Shelton filled the bill this time. Mm. Is there anybody who's caught your eye where you go, this guy or this woman, they could be good, they could win?
Well, you know, I always feel like Taylor Fritz might have one major in him, and his grass is his best surface. He's won a lot of tournaments on it. And he's gone deep at Wimbledon before. He's got a good game for it. If you're looking for an outsider, he's a guy who could do well. I'm curious to watch Jakub Menšík, the Czech player who got to the semis of the French Open, beat Novak at the Miami Open and won that title a couple years ago. He's a young guy with a huge...
I saw him yesterday.
Really athletic. Those are two guys to watch for sure. And on the women's side, I'm very curious to see... what Jesse Pegula can do here. She's no surprise, but looked good on the lead-ups, never won a major. This might be a chance with her kind of flat game on the grass. The ball kicks through or pushes through, and she could potentially have a shot at winning it here. And then Mira Andreeva, who won the French Open as a teenager, has really good tools for grass, Tony, and could potentially do the double here. She's got a good head on her shoulders and a good game.
Yeah, I would bet against Maya Joint getting through the next round. That'd be my best bet of the week. By the way, I'm sure you don't see this because you're there and you're not watching television. Andy Roddick is very good. He's very good on TV. Do you remember him as a talker and a good talker when he played?
Andy Roddick, top three athletes I ever covered as far as being quick-witted, great interviews.
Really
the
good.
Banter. He was always good, always good. And when I did my book on Federer, you know, one phone call sort of made the book. He was fantastic. He's got a great insight into the game. He's super quick. And, it's a gift to tennis that he's decided to get involved in it for me. I think
really good. I'll tell you a quick story about him. Many years back, I was interviewing Drew Brees, the quarterback at that time, you know, for, I guess, the Saints, who ultimately won a Super Bowl. And Drew Brees was a tennis player when he was a kid, when he was, you know, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. And he said, but I don't play tennis anymore. And I asked him why, and he said, an 8-year-old kid beat me in Texas. And I just said I was done. And that kid was Andy Roddick. He beat Drew. Like, Andy Roddick was like 8 or 9, and Drew Brees was like 12. And Andy Roddick, I've always remembered that. And he's really good on television. You know, better than, well, you know, a lot of them are really good. The McEnroes are really good. It's really good. Anyway, Chris, thank you so much. We'll get back to you, I'm sure. It's a pleasure to have you on. Thanks.
Thanks, Tony. Appreciate it.
Chris Clary, boys and girls. We will take a break. I should read this. This segment with Chris Clary has been brought to you by FanDuel. Play your game. And we will have email and jingle when we return. I am Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Oh, I love this. It's like having an indoor pool in your head.
We're going to need this for the next few days.
Yes, so wet. So beautiful, so transportive, just takes you away. It's just wonderful. Jeremy Vint, it's wonderful. You want to do the Bethesda Bagel Ad?
Yes, Bethesda Bagels. We love them. You will as well. Just go to BethesdaBagels.com for the location in the D.C. area nearest you. Then pop on in and you'll be thrilled.
And before we get to the mailbag, let me just say I pulled into Nazareth, was feeling about half past dead. I just need some place where I can lay my head. Hey, mister, can you tell me where a man might find a bed? He just grinned, shook my hand. No was all he said. That is from the album Music from Big Pink, which was released on this day 58 years ago, 7/1/68. Yeah. One of the great albums of all time. Ugh. That's the band that Bob Dylan was playing with in Woodstock, New York, and went on to total greatness. Thanks to our guests today, Taylor Twellman, Brian Windhorst, Chris Clary. Thanks as well to today's sponsors. Remember, you can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Odyssey. And if you get the show through Apple, please leave us a review. From Bob Gray in Stratford, on Prince Edward Island, Canada. Canada Day is today, July 1st, and it's a great day of celebration, parades, and parties across the nation from coast to coast to coast. We have three oceans, huh? Arctic, Atlantic, and Pacific. Here on Prince Edward Island, everybody heads for the beach or the golf course. We have dozens of high quality. Being the potato capital of Canada, we check all the farm potato fields as we drive by on our way to celebration, so I naturally thought of you, the Spud King. And this is a note of profound gratitude for you and your gang of happy podcasters for being a huge part of the daily rhythm of my life for decades and decades. Canada Day is a day for reflecting on our many blessings, and your podcast and the PTI show are certainly high on the blessing list for lots of Canadians. Never stop waving that flag and wishing us goodnight. Happy Canada Day to you and all my fellow Canadian littles. That's very, very nice.
It is lovely.
Appreciate that.
And try the mussels.
Yeah. Prince Edward Island, lovely. Just lovely. Lots of golf courses. They can only play them probably about 4 or 5 months a year.
Yeah.
By the way, our potatoes are worrying me now because the stalks coming up out of the ground,
growing out of the bags,
are at least 2 feet high and are flowering.
But we talked.
Did we plant flowers?
But you were had a chance to talk to Buster before his interview.
He said, "Send a picture." He said it sounded good.
He said it sounded very good.
Got gold.
He said, "We think you're gonna have you're gonna be giving out potatoes to your neighbors. That's how many you're gonna get."
You can only grow 3 or 4 in each bag, and we only have 5 bags, so we're not giving out potatoes.
These are our potatoes.
Red Hobbs in Linton, Indiana. I was contacted by Yellowstone, and they pulled me off the wait list and offered me a contract to work at the grocery store at Old Faithful until the end of October. I accepted the contract, and on my days off, I'll be able to watch the Idaho potato farmers bring in their bounty. If any littles will be visiting Yellowstone, they can stop by the general store and say hi. With limited internet service, I will try to catch up on your podcast when I can. May the Nationals and Cubs continue to battle for a wild card spot, and may your golf game remain enjoyable. P.S. Tell Ryan Grove and Lee Panic to eat it. That's very, very nice from Brett Hobbs. Here is a haiku for June's full moon from Shad. Harbinger of the only ice cream worthy fruit, full strawberry moon, which is not red, not pink, but was, you know, goldish.
Yeah.
From Peter Potke in Southington, Connecticut, which is right near Bristol. Tony, you were talking about the Lido Golf Course on Monday. I said to myself, I know that course. I played the Lido in Wisconsin. Oh, I said Minnesota. I was wrong. In Wisconsin. Just last week at the Sand Valley Golf Resort, about 3 hours northwest of Chicago. You are mistaken about the wind. It is very windy at the Lido in Wisconsin. I'm a pretty big hitter, me and the Lama both. And a three-wood came up short on a par three into the wind. A couple of drives downwind were 330-plus crosswind holes. I've never seen a golf ball do that. Here is a nice write-up from one of the golf magazines on how and why a course from 100 years ago from Long Island was meticulously recreated in the middle of nowhere in central Wisconsin. It's in Golf Digest. I would like to read that. At one point, the original Lido golf course was considered one of the best in America. From Todd Warnkin. Can you ask Bob Ryan if Paraguay defeating Germany qualifies as an upset? It's funny. Jenny Kissinger Messner in Lititz, Pennsylvania. Do you know where that is? I do not. When I was 16, I took advantage of an opportunity to study for a year in Sao Paulo, Brazil. For a practically Amish kid from Lancaster County, Pennsylvania, it required a massive transformation to learn the language and appreciate the cultural ways of my new home. Midway through my stay, Brazil won the World Cup, and the entire country shut down for each game. I'll never forget the joy of holding the Brazilian flag out of a window of a VW Bug racing around town and cheering. Brazil is about to play in the knockout phase. I will be 16 all over again. This is really nice. And then she encloses a picture. It says, P.S., I even got to meet Pelé.
How about that?
So that's great. Thank you for that. From Brett Bossy in Lake Mary, Florida. So obviously, Lititz, Pennsylvania, is in the Amish. That would be in northeastern or southeastern Pennsylvania.
It's above Lancaster.
Okay. Brett Bossy in Lake Mary, Florida, the official Brett with two T's of the show. I used to live in a lot of places. You might know me as Brett with two T's from Lee, New Hampshire. Now I live in Lake Mary, Florida, just outside Orlando. But I also used to live in Buffalo, so I'm very familiar with excessive MLB blackout restrictions. People in Buffalo could not access Mets, Yankees, Guardians, or Pirates games, even on the MLB app, even though they were several hours away from Western New York. Even the Mets, it's an eight-hour drive.
Yeah,
even stranger, Blue Jays games were available. Toronto is just 90 minutes from Buffalo, making it the closest team to the market. But it gets weirder. In 2021, because of COVID restrictions, the Blue Jays played a chunk of their home schedule in Buffalo. Despite this, games were still available with no blackouts. That meant if you had the app on your phone, you could watch the game streaming, even if you were sitting in the stands. But you can't watch the Yankees play in Seattle or the Mets play at Dodger Stadium. Make that make sense. I can't. Tom Targonsky, Sioux City, Iowa. As a previous emailer mentioned, if you're a baseball fan and you live in Iowa, as I do, you're screwed. I grew up in Brooklyn as a Mets fan. Remember watching all the Mets and Yankees games that were broadcast locally all throughout my youth. It was wonderful for a baseball-loving kid. I can't watch any game on the MLB Network and some other networks that involve the Cubs, White Sox, Royals, Cardinals, Brewers, or Twins. Not just home games, but away games too. For example, if MLB Network is showing the Cubs at the LA Dodgers, it's blacked out. Hocus pocus junk indeed. That's terrible.
Yeah.
You're paying a lot of money for this.
Baseball's got to fix that.
What is this? From Greg Spinelli in McLean in Virginia. Wilbon, quote, I watch soccer to learn what's happening in the world, unquote. That's like listening to the Tony Kornheiser show to learn about soccer. Yeah, just, what are you doing? From Ruck, from the Soviet Safeway in Silver Spring in Maryland. Mr. Tony, the Capital Weather Gang. Did I miss the code for their new website? Even if we don't get a discount, I just want to use a code. I called them up today.
Oh, you did?
I dialed them up on my phone because I wanted to know about the heat wave. I had to go to an app. It was not sufficient for me.
Mm.
I want more than that. From David Epstein in New York, as a proud father, a University of Chicago graduate, I appreciate the shout-out for perhaps the most rigorous academic program in the country, but I must come to the defense of your claim that it doesn't play football. They may not play football well. After all, how much fear can a team named the Maroons strike in the heart of an opponent? But I can fully attest to the fact, having personally attended a game, that the University of Chicago does have a D3 football team. Sure, opponents such as Trine, Knox, and Beloit may not be household names, but the Maroons will forever have this, the first ever Heisman Trophy. That's right, Jay Berwanger. Known at the time as the Downtown Athletic Club Trophy, was awarded to Jay Berwanger of, you got it, the University of Chicago. Eat it, every other school. From John Erickson in San Diego, I saw the title on Monday's podcast, Bubbles with the Captain, and figured I finally had a reason to cruise with Captain Tony. I'm not much of a fishing guy, and I figured you were starting sunrise cruises with champagne toast. Alas, not the case. And how is the captain? 4 years old already. Yeah, he is. He's 4 years old. And the other one, the middle one, is about to have a birthday.
The other
and
one.
Become
the
seven.
Other one.
One of the others. From Scott L. in Mexico City. On a recent episode, you referred to Barry Snyder in Panama as the rum man. If this is the same Barry Snyder I served with in the Air Force, believe me, rum-dum is definitely a more appropriate moniker. While Master Sergeant retired Snyder does know his rums, and I credit him for introducing me to Nativo and Diplomatico, two of my favorite rums. He once got stuck in a phone booth in Spain for 2 hours after a long night out. While that wasn't his finest moment, he did serve honorably in Panama, the Azores, Afghanistan, and the Pentagon. After retiring from the United States Air Force, he moved to Wilbon's favorite Midwestern city north of the border and sold donuts for some guy named Tim Horton. Tim Horton is a famous place.
Yeah.
He then transitioned to the role of a proud pageant dad, watching his daughter be named Miss Panama a few years ago. Wow. Quite a wild ride through life that definitely sounds like a great Chuck and Roxy episode to me.
Yeah.
Yes, he listens, right?
I guess.
Barry listens?
Apparently so, yeah.
That's
fascinating.
Wow. Tony Beeson. Dear Dr. Kornheiser, my dad passed away several years ago in 2007, but he has been in my mind lately. For one of the many stories he told me was of his earliest sports memory. Now, for some context, my dad was 50 years old when I was born, so his memory stretched way back. He shared with me how excited he was in the fall of 1926, 100 years ago. His dad had been a pitcher for the local town team and was a big baseball fan. Just prior to the World Series that year, Grandpa Beeson had saved up enough money to buy a new radio. My dad and his brothers listened to the 1926 World Series between the Yankees and the St. Louis Cardinals, the famous Grover-Cleveland-Alexander series. I still recall my dad and Uncle Carl shaking their heads and speculating how dumb it was that Babe Ruth made the last out in the ninth inning of Game 7 by getting caught in a vain attempt to steal second base. I believe that remains the only time a World Series has ended on a caught stealing. Isn't that a nice...
That is.
So nice. From Paul and Kim. Good morning, Tony. My wife and I have spent the past few days enjoying the World Cup. Thought you'd enjoy knowing that the Moroccan coach looks amazingly like Larry Brown. I haven't seen him. I don't know the Moroccan coach. Well, that's great. From Patrick Sitter in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. If Saliz is 20 seconds ahead, does that mean he's already heard you read this email? P.S. on another matter, the World Cup blows. Yeah, and one more from Joe Rizzo. A quick question for recent emailer Dean Todd of Wabash College. Has he ever said to a student, fat, drunk, and stupid is no way to go through life, son? Yeah, from Animal House, one of the two most brilliant comedies ever written, Animal House and the original Hangover. If you're out on your bike tonight, everyone, as always, do wear white.
Love to prove that, wouldn't you? Get your name into the National Geographic.